You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Welcome to Sunday School Dropouts, the podcast where an ex-Christian and a non-believing sort of Jew read all the way through the Bible for the first time. My name is Nico Bakulich.
And I'm Lauren O'Neill.
And let's get biblical.
How dare you cut me off? Let's get biblical. We gotta go over some stuff first, such as I'm the ex-Christian, I was raised Presbyterian, I'm now an atheist.
And I'm the non-believing sort of Jew. Also, this is not a Christian Bible study podcast.
And it's not appropriate for children. I read the New International Version.
And I read the NRSV, New Revised Standard Version.
Is there anything else we need to tell the listeners?
One important fact. Do you want to know what it is?
I'm dying to know.
You got it. We got a guest today.
I didn't notice him.
Mm-hmm. When am I allowed to talk?
Our guest today is a good friend of mine, a talented musician and microbiologist. I've played music with him before, and I can vouch. He's got the stuff.
He's a great microbiologist.
That's what I thought you were going to say. Remember that when you had that inspection in the studio?
Mm-hmm. His name is Ryan Honecker. Hey, Ryan, how's it going?
Hi, I'm Ryan, and I'm a Sunday school dropout.
Yay! So, as we ask all of our guests, we will ask you, what is your religious background?
So, I have a different background than mm-hmm. other guests of yours. I was born in Arizona, but was raised in Utah, and guess what? I was raised Mormon.
Whoa. You're raised to be a bumblebee.
I was a hardworking, hardworking bumblebee. So I was raised Mormon in Utah, and in the part of Utah, well, basically outside of Salt Lake, Utah is 90-something percent Mormon. So I honestly knew growing up one person that I can remember who wasn't Mormon.
Whoa.
Yeah, so it was in Utah County, or the county, as it's sometimes known.
Oh. That's a cool name, though.
It is kind of cool. What's cool? It sounds like a Netflix show with an acoustic
But
intro,
it would be about Orange County, not Salt Lake County.
So, Utah County.
Utah County.
A lot of my family is still practicing Mormons, actually. So I grew up Mormon. I went to Brigham Young University, or as we call it, the Lord's University. And I actually went on an LDS mission, which I know you know, but I'm not sure if you knew that actually, Lauren.
I didn't know that like in specific, but I would have assumed.
You would have assumed, yeah. So I didn't stop being Mormon. So now, by the way, I'm an atheist now, and I have been for quite a while. But yeah, so I served.
How's that going for you?
Pretty well.
It's great, right?
So far, so good. There's less to worry about. A lot less to worry about.
Until we die.
Without eternity to worry about, it's just dramatically, it's kind of infinitely shorter.
Yeah.
Stuff to worry about.
I hope that everything that was promised in the sales pitch has come true for you.
In the Dawkins sales pitch?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Dawkins symposium that I went to. So I was one of those young kids with backpacks and name tags for 2 years in Poland, actually.
Poland!
Yeah. So I lived there from when I was 19 to 21 years old. Now the missionaries are younger. They changed it.
Really?
In the last year. So now they're 18 to 20. Yeah, well, I think they were losing a lot of people between 18 and 19 because life is a lot more interesting than being a Mormon, especially when you're 18 years old.
Yeah.
So I was hardcore into it. I graduated from BYU, actually, and I was still mostly Mormon then, and then kind of just found my way out after that.
Yeah. So I have a lot of questions.
Please ask away. Lots of people do. I do too.
First, I'm hoping you can give us kind of like a fast facts Mormon 101.
Can you do the fast facts sound effect before?
Do we have a sound effect?
Well, I think...
Or was that the...
At one point, Mallory Ortberg suggested the Fast Facts theme song.
Oh, the Facts of Life.
Which is the Facts of Life theme song.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Sped up to double speed.
So we don't have that, to make it faster. No.
We can put that in a post-production.
You may be confusing Fast Facts with the Etymology Corner.
I know. The Etymology Corner, I know not everyone has been in the studio. It's a lot smaller than I thought. I'm assuming it's that corner.
Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Correct.
But it is hard to get over there.
You can see the zip line on the ceiling.
You got it the first try, too. That was
that's where the zip line leads, so you can see.
Yeah, we were playing with it earlier. Nico has it mic'd up really nicely, actually.
So, like, Mormons... consider themselves Christian, yes?
Correct, yeah. So the full name of the church is actually the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
And so it was founded by Joseph Smith in the 1800s.
Right.
And y'all use the Bible, but also some other stuff.
Right, yeah. So they believe technically that in the Book of Mormon, which most of you have seen that musical documentary about probably at this point.
It's playing in San Francisco right now.
Yeah, so technically they believe, so they have several tomes of scripture, actually.
Right.
So the Book of Mormon is the most famous one. They also have one called the Doctrine and Covenants, which was stuff dictated by Joseph Smith, the founder. And they also have another even weirder one called the Pearl of Great Price, which is a bunch of crazy Egyptian stuff that Joseph Smith allegedly translated, which of course is like ridiculous now with current Egyptology and archaeology, whatever. And then also the Bible.
The Hymn of the Pearl in the apocryphal Acts of Thomas, right?
That's right.
The Hymn of the Pearl?
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
Went into Egypt to get a pearl, a very valuable pearl.
Yeah, which is like some sort of Gnostic fable.
I wonder if that's where the name... Actually, I don't know where the name of that text comes from. That's interesting. It could be related to that, actually.
So what are these texts? If you want to just focus on the Book of Mormon, because that's the most popular one, that's cool. You could also give us a rundown of the other ones.
Yeah, so the Book of Mormon, and so they also believe in the Bible, but what they technically say is as far as it is translated correctly, gives them a little bit of an out. But they use the King James Bible. So for people who don't know what that is, that's kind of like if Shakespeare wrote the Bible, sort of like old school sort of.
So it's been really interesting. Shakespeare was writing while James was king, so.
Oh, so there you go.
It's literally from the same time as Shakespeare, yeah.
So it's funny to me to hear, I've been listening to this podcast because I only know the Bible through, and I've read the whole thing, start to finish before. It's really interesting to me to hear your versions of it, or these other versions of it, because to me it just sounds so... It sounds so goofy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
the King James Version is all like, it's stoic and classic.
It has that,
and like,
yeah.
It's kind of this panache, right, to the delivery because it's so old. And then just hearing kind of more of the regular sort of contemporary translation of it is, especially all these verses that I know very well, because a lot of the ones that are famous in kind of, mainstream or whatever, Christianity, are also very well known in Mormonism. So to hear kind of those other versions of it has been really, kind of really interesting.
There's
to hear.
Some, like... evangelical denominations that will only use the KJV.
Oh, really?
And they're like, well, it's the authorized version. It says authorized. Like, yeah, authorized by King James. Oh, my God.
It's not like God came down once.
Right.
And then checked that Bible and was like, looks good to me.
He's like, I only have one rubber stamp. And sorry, King James, you got it.
Yeah, I'll be back in 700 years.
So what is... The Book of Mormon.
So the Book of Mormon is, Joseph Smith, when he founded the church, was revealed these ancient gold plates, which he retrieved.
Gold?
Yeah.
Wow, Moses had to deal with stone, but Joseph Smith got gold.
Mormons. So yeah, there's, I was going to sing the song, but I won't.
There's a song?
Oh, there's, I mean, Mormons have their own. I mean, we use a lot of the same
hymns.
We've got our own Sunday school stuff. Yeah, there's one about finding the golden plates.
Oh my God, that's so exciting.
So the Book of Mormon is Joseph Smith translating these golden plates. And so they're a record of basically the population of North and Central America. Because after Jesus died, there was 3 days of darkness, right? So during those 3 days... Turns out Jesus went to America to prophesy and teach all
some
the
steam
people
off.
Here.
Yeah,
yeah, you know. I mean, he got crucified,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean,
you got to
give
break
the dude
after
a break.
That, yeah.
I mean, what are you going to do? So go hang out in America.
Self care.
Yeah, you got to take care of yourself. So yeah, he came and taught and established Christianity in the Americas.
The Americas.
And so then there's
did he
all
go
this
to South America?
So that part's a little vague. Exactly. So Joseph Smith allegedly, dug up these plates in upstate New York. on Hill Cumorah, I believe it's called. So I'm a little rusty. I've been not Mormon for a while. So all your Mormon listeners can, you know, can tweet in and, you know, correct my knowledge. But yeah, so it's a little bit vague because it obviously the geography and archaeology, none of it really
exists.
Yeah. So, but it was about, so, I mean, it follows a tribe of people who took boats over from Jerusalem area, and I think it was, if I remember correctly, it's like 600 BC or so.
So are those the 10 lost tribes?
So yeah, the Mormons have an interesting relation with that a little bit because, okay. So there's also this thing in Mormonism that a lot of people don't know as much about, it's called a patriarchal blessing.
Okay.
And so you do this sometimes, it's kind of vague when you do it, and it's sort of this like even extra magical part of Mormonism where you go in and there's so Mormonism, there's the local congregations are called wards and the aggregation of wards are called stakes.
Okay.
And then it goes up from there to like, you know, the whole hierarchy of it. And so the head of the church is the prophet because they believe in kind of this whole sort of structure that existed when Jesus was around where the prophet speaks for the church. And then there's actually 12 apostles of the Mormon church.
Well, like, historically or like now?
No, historically. From the beginning. So there's like the prophet who's the head and then the 12 apostles and then it kind of, there's other kind of organizations that go
and
down.
And Joseph Smith was the prophet? Or?
Yeah, he was the prophet. Okay. And then Brigham Young was the second prophet after Joseph Smith was killed.
Okay. No, but I mean, you're saying that they elect 12 apostles right now, like there are 12 apostles in
the
church.
Yeah, there still are. Yeah, so there's a prophet.
Still are. Okay.
Yeah, ever since the beginning, it's been the same way, okay. Right? So there's
so
now.
So the prophet is like the Mormon Pope.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, the Mormon Pope. And so he dictates, like, he's like the mouthpiece of God, like the Pope sort of is. And then instead of cardinals, and I mean, it's just, it's similar to Catholicism, but except it's, there's not a professional priesthood like there is in Catholicism. So
oh, really?
It's all volunteer run. Yeah, yeah, all okay, membership okay, run. Okay, okay. So even, you know, your local congregation, the head of that is called the bishop, but he's just some regular dude.
Interesting.
And it's patriarchal, you know, like most Christianity is where only, you know, men held the leadership. I mean, there's a women's component of it, but the leadership is run through the male part.
Right.
Anyway, so the patriarch, there's like one per stake and you go in and he gives you this blessing and he's kind of like, it's like Mormon fortune telling, kind of like he talks about your life. But one of the things they always tell you that's part of your patriarchal blessing is which of the 12 tribes that you have descended from.
Really?
Yeah, super interesting. And I wish, I don't even know, I don't think I have mine anymore, but I can't remember.
You can't remember?
I know, you think, well,
I hope you aren't a fucking
Benjamite. Until
your
podcast, yeah, right? Goddamn Levites,
hate the Benjamites.
What's funny, because I honestly, I didn't understand that I never understood that very well until listening to the podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because, I mean, you guys went over it over and over and over, and I was like, oh, now I kind of finally understand, because it's like the Lost Tribes, it's kind of this whole thing, and now I feel like I understand it better than I ever did, but anyway, where were we? I was rambling about Mormonism.
The Book of Mormon, Golden
Yeah,
Plates.
So the Book of Mormon. So, yeah, so there's this whole series
There's a
of,
song. I heard there was a song.
There's a song.
Please sing a little bit of the song.
The golden plate lay hidden deep in the mountainside. Are you listening to the tone of this?
It's beautiful.
100%
until, great. Oh, shoot, I forget the words. I can't remember the word. Until God found one faithful, something like that. Yeah, that's as much as
great.
I got, apparently, yeah.
That was enough for me.
Oh, thank you.
It's Tolkien-esque, I'd say.
I feel like Vicky Corin on Only Connect.
So basically there's this whole history of sort of early Christianity that took place in the Americas, and that's what the Book of Mormon allegedly is chronicling.
I see. So is the Bible like above everything else, above the other three like Mormon texts, or are they all equal?
I'd say the Book of Mormon is probably, well, it's hard. I mean, they believe in all of them, right? Like you carry all of them with you, right?
Sure.
But the Book of Mormon is kind of like their thing, right? Actually, all of them came from Joseph Smith, really, except for the Bible, which they also use. But I don't know if there's not really much of a hierarchy. I would say like the Pearl of Great Price is probably the least, it's not that long and it's kind of weird. And so that's probably least not discussed as the other. But like when you're going through Sunday school every year, they just rotate like on a 4-year cycle where like you study one for the whole year and then you study the second one and they kind of rotate.
Like
it.
Our podcast.
That's what they did. When I was, exactly. Yeah. So you've got all sorts of Mormon texts in
great.
Your future.
What kind of page count are we talking here?
Yeah, how long is the Book of Mormon?
So the Book of Mormon,
this is what we really care about on Sunday School Dropouts. How long is it?
Well, okay, like,
yeah, exactly.
You know,
you're planning for the future.
Well, okay, everybody knows like the Bible is hella long. Mm-hmm. The Bible's like very thick.
Technically described as hella long.
Yeah, that's like the metric measurement for how long it is.
If you look
hella
it up
long.
In Wikipedia under Wikipedia categories,
It'll be like hella long books. Yeah.
So there was a movement, by the way, to add hella as that, you know, there's like addo, nano, all these prefixes.
Yeah. Did you guys see this? Dude, we're from NorCal. Of course he's
there. Yeah. I actually signed that petition. I was a scientist.
That was like 10 years ago.
We'd be talking about helometers.
Helameters.
Helameters, yeah.
And you did work at Stanford too, right?
I did, yeah.
So NorCal scientist.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I actually was designing this genetic thing that I was going to call like hella when I was there.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I didn't, where somebody scooped me on it, but.
What the fuck?
I know.
Those fucking snakes.
So how long is the Book of Mormon?
So if the Bible is yay thick, I'm holding up my fingers at about 2.5 inches.
Two and a half inches.
I'd say the Book of Mormon is maybe a solid inch.
Okay, so it's like longer than the New Testament.
Yeah, longer than the New Testament. Okay. Maybe more like Old Testament-y.
The Old Testament's really long.
Yeah, and it's really boring. I mean, and the Book of Mormon has like, you know, there's parts that are better than others or whatever, like anything else.
But is it stories or sermons or a mixture of both?
It's kind of both. I mean, it's
now, that seems like a kind of question I could answer myself very quickly, but.
Well, you should then.
Well, thanks for nothing. Great interviewing skills.
I mean, I know I was doing a bad job. That's what I was trying to point out. You don't need to get sarcastic about it.
No. Tell us.
I mean, it's old. I would say it's probably more Old Testament-y because it's a history, but it's a history of the doctrine sort of as through the lens of the history, kind of like the old, not all of the Old Testament is like that, but like parts of the Old Testament, where it's like a history of these people, but it's a history of the religion and the dogma through these people.
So can you give us like maybe a description of like a story from the Book of Mormon or something like that?
Yeah. Is there like, like in the Old Testament, there's stuff like Samson or Jonah or Cain and Abel or something. Big time, flashy headline stories. What do we got in
Put them on the marquee.
Mm-hmm. Make a movie. Sell those rights. What do we got in the Book of Mormon that
there's
we can
some good
pitch?
Stuff. I mean, there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of filler like there is in the Bible, as you guys well know at this
there's
point.
No filler in the Bible.
No filler, all killer.
It's fucking nice. Edge of your seat suspense the whole way through.
It's bears eat, like bald guys commanding bears to eat kids
24/7. Yeah, and there's never any parts that are boring where they go over the same thing over and over again and over and over again for
and
like
for this week's
years.
Book. it's funny. I haven't thought about it in a long time. I mean, in the early part of it, there's some gold about, so these people came over, right? This family came over from the old world and it was like this one family unit. And then it got divided into kind of the good people and the bad people. They're called the Nephites because the righteous son was named Nephi. Mm. And then the bad son was called Laman. And so it was like the Nephites versus the Lamanites. Right. And so that was kind of like, that's the plot. Like that's the you know, the exposition of the plot, like the good versus the bad. There's some good stuff in the beginning where people are like chopping off some heads and, you know, this and that. There's some decent stuff in there.
And it all takes place in America or in the Americas.
Yeah, in the Americas.
But it doesn't star indigenous people. It stars people that...
It stars...
Yeah, people who
Israelites
came...
Israelites.
Yeah, Israelites. Yeah, Israelites, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And what is there like a historical connection between those Israelites and like Native American people?
So this is actually a kind of a scandalous part, right? Uh-huh. Because in the intro, so it doesn't specifically go into that into the text, but in the introduction to the book, and I'd be curious if they've changed this or not, but it says actually, which was not written by Joseph Smith. I think it was written by the church later, but I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure on that, but it says something about how the people, you know, the peoples in the Book of Mormon are the primary predecessors to the Native Americans.
Okay.
Which, of course, you know, like that's totally ridiculous. But that's what it used to say, and it said for a long time. And then as history and archaeology and contemporary genetics, all these things obviously proved that disproved, like that became a little more scandalous. And it used to be like, well, this is in the book, even though it wasn't part of the proper text. It meant it was like true. And then it was like, well, it was the introduction, like backpedaling a little bit. So I'm not exactly sure if that's still in there or what the contemporary view of that is. But that's exactly like they were the. And so it's even more scandalous because in the book, the Lamanites, who were the bad people, were cursed with darker skin.
Mm, that's in the text?
Yeah.
Solid choice.
Solid in the text, yeah.
Well, that's, I mean.
And then there's also.
It is an American religion, so.
There you go, right? And there's, yeah, I mean, there's even scandalous stuff where, you know, when people would convert, their skin would get lighter. Just like horrible.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, that's not official, but there were like people who so ran bad. The church. Yeah, right. Who said that. So
and, like,
there's some
black people weren't even allowed in the church for a long time.
For a long, well, they were allowed, but they weren't allowed full rights because they were, so they, and this
cool.
is something
where they invented something brand new called the 3/5 compromise.
Yeah. I was just going to say, yeah. And there was this thing where, the descendants of Cain, like he was cursed with
right.
the darker skin, right? And so that was like part of that, this whole.
The descendants of Ham.
In... Well, Ham is another version. There's also Cain.
Oh, really?
Also, in some cases, Cain is the first vampire.
What?
Oh. What?
Mm-hmm.
Who,
okay, now
what?
You're talking.
If I'm
now
not
you're talking
if
religion.
I'm not mistaken, in the Blade mythology, or I might be confusing it with the Underworld mythology.
I've never seen either, so.
The curse of Cain is vampirism.
Oh. Well, that's
great.
Way more interesting than Christianity.
Yeah, that's true.
Although, Jesus.
But without
is the
one,
first zombie,
you wouldn't
so
have the other.
That's cool, too.
He's not the first zombie, actually, because the first zombies appeared after when he was still dead, when he was chilling in the Americas.
Oh, that's true.
The first
true.
Zombies came up, according to the New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
According
and
to
Isaiah,
the
and Isaiah saw visions of the zombie apocalypse as well.
Ezekiel,
excuse me.
But visions, God, not damn. Actual, like, but not.
But
so wait,
were,
when.
I mean, actual, they were God-given visions. Ryan.
Yeah, but.
Ryan.
But, no, but a vision
Ryan.
Is not the same as reality.
It is
at
in
the
Bible.
Time. I mean, it is, but it's not happening contemporaneously, is what I'm saying. So wait, the first person raised from the dead was while Jesus was. Oh, it was.
Well, he brought some people back from the dead, including Lazarus.
Yeah,
but other people had been brought back from the dead way before that by Elijah and Elisha.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah,
that's true.
But then also, when Jesus was dead, some zombies came up from the grave.
When zombie, when Jesus died.
When zombie died.
When
Rob Zombie died.
It was.
For our sins.
Like, the natural order was upset in such a way that the dead cracked open their own tombs and walked.
Because he defeated death.
That's only described in one of the Gospels, if I'm not mistaken.
So, what was your childhood like?
So my parents are very educated, and for Mormons they're very liberal. Like, they're not conservative, they're not Republican. So
that's exciting.
Which is pretty. So
good job.
Which makes it very a lot easier to deal with them now than it would otherwise, right? And in fact, I think so. I only have two sisters, which for Mormon, I'm saying only because we're Mormons, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of them has left, and the other one is still a member. And so my sister left before I did. And so when I left, it was really traumatic on my parents because, you know, my mom, like, why are we bad parents? And I was like, you guys are great parents because you taught us to be able to think our way and be rational humans, you know, but they obviously don't see it that way. So in that way, it was good. And it makes, yeah, again, if they were conservative or Republican or had this some very different views from what I have now, it would be a lot more difficult. But that part of it's not. But they were very strict parents.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, even like among all my friends whose parents were maybe even much more strongly Mormon, they were very strict. But I mean, you know, it's like boring. I grew up in the suburbs like everyone else. It was just everyone else was Mormon, right? So I mean, no one smoked or drank or anything, and so you just had to entertain yourself. You know, by
how?
Setting shit on fire. Like,
oh,
you know,
okay.
Regular stuff that bored teenagers do.
Sure.
Just without the alcohol part of it.
Now, is it true? Okay, so you can't have coffee.
No caffeine. Well, no coffee or tea.
But Coke is okay.
Well, yeah, Coke is mostly okay. So there's no official doctrine about it. And depending on your level of like, you know, what level Mormon you are, like some people will drink it and some people won't drink it at all. That one's kind of ridiculous, right? But yeah, no tobacco, no. I mean, I'm assuming now that pot is on its way to fully being legal, they probably won't allow that either.
Unless they can corner the market.
Yeah, unless they can, unless
which
the church is like buying in. Yeah.
Which is why Coke is like, okay, right?
Yeah, because, well, it's Coke or Pepsi that's supposedly owned by the Mormon church
or
something.
Or there's some, they have some stake in
it. I'm sure
it.
Yeah, their retirement fund owns a significant chunk of Coke.
Yeah, there's
stock
some, though, there's something
like
where like officially where that is. And like the Marriott hotels, right? Like they're owned by a Mormon, and like
I didn't know
instead
that.
Of Bibles in Marriott hotels, there's Book of Mormon.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, it used to be true at least. Yeah, well, you're generally probably not looking for Bibles in the closets.
I mean, finding
or maybe you are
finding Bible, finding Bibles in the drawers was always a highlight of my childhood when we traveled.
Wait, really?
Absolutely.
It's like an Easter egg hunt or something?
Well, I mean, it was just like...
That was like foreign to you.
We didn't
like,
have
what is this?
Bibles in the house when I was right. a kid. But like when we traveled and we were in some motel and, you know, it's like I was a kid. What were we going to do with my family? That's the only time I remember like reading Bible stories was in hotels. That was where we first read the parable of the vine tenders or the parable of the renters or whatever it's called.
The weird one.
Yeah. The one that doesn't make any sense because it's supposed to be like ironic or something. And I remember my whole family sitting around in a motel room reading that from the Bible and being like, what the hell is this?
That's so
what
funny.
Are we doing
like, how different is that from like our childhood?
Right, right, right.
Like, oh
yeah.
God, do we have to read the Bible tonight?
I like, yeah, I learned that in Sunday school. I had to memorize
it. It was like, you know, being a kid and then like watching Hungarian TV or something and being like, what the fuck is going on here? This is great, you know?
What things should I know about Mormon? Like, what should a non-Mormon know? Because here's like the stereotypes that I have.
Yeah, I'm this is always really interesting to me about what people who aren't Mormons think about Mormons.
It's like no alcohol or caffeine.
No sex.
Well, that's for every lots like, of moms. Christian. Ever. Like every Christian denomination is like no sex. So that seems normal to me. Like polygamy.
So I was actually thinking about this the other day. I don't know why. Maybe it was when you and I were hanging out the other day and we were talking about the podcast. I had a friend growing up who was a polygamist, like in my neighborhood.
Well, like,
and then he ended up moving with his dad and all these crazy moms to Southern Utah. And we were on some family trip down there to some national park. And we went, this is the weirdest thing. I've been meaning to ask my parents about this because I know this happened, but I want to hear like, what the hell were you thinking? So we went, they lived in Southern Utah in the middle of the desert in this like giant butte where they had like, this is so, I was thinking about this, like, I can't believe this is a thing that I actually did. So they had like dynamited these caves out of this giant butte and they lived in these cave homes
in the
middle of nowhere and they were full on polygamists.
Whoa.
And we went and visited him because he was like a really good friend of mine when I was like 7 or something. He lived a few blocks away and like, I didn't really understand what was happening.
Right.
It wasn't kind of until later I was like, kind of put it together. But that's super weird.
That's full blown insane. Yeah.
Is it weird for people to live in caves
with like 10 sort of moms
in the United States in the 21st century? Yes,
like some sort of that's modern mole man.
His name was Shem. I hope you're listening right now. Give me a call. And he had like,
Shem means name in Hebrew.
Oh, does it?
Yes.
Oh, interesting. And like all his, he had this giant family, and his dad was much older, and like some of his sisters, actually other moms. Now that you know, in retrospect, and they had all these biblical names.
And they lived in some sort of man-made rock hive.
Yes. Everyone lives in some sort of hive in Utah, right? It's the beehive.
I mean, it's
state
the beehive state.
Whatever.
Yeah, you have to build it.
You have to build
based
a hive.
On secretions from your body.
Yeah.
You have to build a home.
Except
like bees.
It seems a little less matriarchal than bees.
It's funny.
It's remarkably less matriarchal. That's a good observation.
A beehive run by men. Yeah, it's confusing.
And then there's a lot of my other stereotype is like all the esoteric stuff that you have to, the only like certain people learn as they get higher and higher in the ranks.
Yeah, so that stuff, that's the weird stuff. And the weird part about it, it's not weird because lots of secret societies and cults function this way.
Right,
but once
right.
you get to a certain point, so all the stuff, so you see the temples, right? You can see the one in Oakland from here almost, right?
I didn't know there was one.
Yeah,
a
so there's one in
Oakland.
Oakland on the hills.
Okay.
You can see it from Bart, this giant edifice. And so the stuff that goes on there, that's like the top secret stuff.
Oh,
right?
Really?
Like, yeah, like you're not allowed to talk about the stuff that goes on there. And so that's like the baptisms for the dead and like people get married there. There's all these other ceremonies and things that happen there. And you're like, it's like part of when you're learning the stuff there is you're swearing to not ever
to
talk
keep it
about
a secret.
It.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, and there's secret handshakes and secret symbols and secret names. And it's like as cult as you can possibly get. And that's all that. And it's like, and it's just weird because you think about these Mormons that, you know, there's like regular people and they are, but it's a total cult. There's all this crazy stuff. And like, I can't even describe. And honestly, it still creeps me out to talk about that stuff.
Really?
Yeah. Because it's like, it's such like a crazy secret thing. And it's so weird that it's like, it's not even now, like knowing what I know, like it still is not comfortable for me to talk about like the stuff that actually happens in there.
How far did you get?
So it's not like, you know, the Scottish Rite or something where there's like a million levels okay. and you can go like, you can basically, by the time you're, so for males, it's before you go on a mission, you go through the temple and there's like a set of things that you do in there and you have done them all, except for getting married is one of the things that you do in there. And so by the time you leave to go to be a missionary, you've done as much of the stuff as there is to do.
Really?
And then for females, it's different. Like you go when you get married or kind of go when you want to go. But huh. that's how it was when I was growing up. I'm
do,
not sure. I'm
do
not sure
girls do
now.
Missionary stuff too? Or?
They do, yeah.
Okay.
They do, but they go when they're older. Or okay. when I did it, guys were, you're supposed to go like very, very, like the law basically was you go when you're 19. But you could go up until you were a certain age, like 25 or something, I forget. And then the females would go when they were, they didn't have to go. Males had to go.
Okay.
Females could go if they wanted, but
if they weren't married
until
or
they, yeah, because of course they're supposed to just get married. But if they weren't married, they could go when they're, I think it was 21 or 23 or something. But that has also recently changed as well because the male age range has also changed.
What did you do when you were in Poland?
So you proselytize. I mean, like it's full on. It's the most analogous thing that people are probably. Well, actually, most people are probably familiar with Mormon missionaries. I mean, I see them in the city and in Oakland all the time.
See Jehovah's Witnesses far
yeah.
more often, though.
Yeah, but Well, J-Dubs. I mean,
J-Dubs.
I don't know what. It, yeah, they see them everywhere in
you
the
call
city
them J-Dubs.
Now. Yeah, that's what we call them because they were all over in Poland also.
Oh my God.
Did you guys hang out when you were both?
No, we would like
you're like
fight.
Mortal enemies.
Street
oh
fights?
My god,
totally
I don't
like shark,
my god.
Sharks and jets.
Totally, it was like we would full on Bible bash with them. You weren't supposed to, but we totally would.
Did you learn any Polish?
Yeah, I used to be fluent in Polish.
What
because you speak, and so that's one of the hard things about going abroad is so you're in pairs of people, right?
Right.
And so you get there and so you go to a couple months of training where you kind of learn, and I'm sure it's all different from when I did it, which was a long time ago, but you go in and you kind of learn the doctrine because they have this like lesson plans, like how you teach people, how you convert, how you talk to people. But then you're also learning the language at the same time. But then you get there and you learn like 6 or 8 weeks of a foreign language in class, you know, nothing. Right. So then you're paired up with someone who's been there for, you know, 8 months or 12 months
oh,
or
really?
A year and a half,
okay.
because then they help show you the ropes and like get you around. But then they're also helping to teach you the language and everything.
Wow.
So actually today I have a friend in town who was my greenie, they're called. So I trained him.
Oh my God.
And he's totally ex-Mormon now too. We were just having beers up the
Great.
Street.
Great.
Yeah, which is super funny. But yeah, so you go around and so Poland is very
Catholic.
Very Catholic. Yeah.
yeah.
And I mean, part of it has to do with the history of the country, like Polishness. Poland didn't always exist because after World War II, they divided the country up.
Right.
And so Polishness and Catholicism
used to
became
have a big
very,
Jewish population, not
yeah,
anymore.
Not so much there anymore.
Yeah.
So Catholicism and Polishness kind of became very intertwined. So it became a much more cultural component of the society, more so than a religious component. Which I think is the case for a lot of religious, like any sort of community that is predominantly the same religion, it becomes less about the religion and more about the community and the identity. I mean, which is the same kind of thing that happens in Utah. Even,
yeah,
right, with
that's
Mormonism.
my like theory of religion is that it's like 90% culture, 10%
yeah,
belief.
Totally.
Yeah,
and that's what I mean. And that's part of when you're trying to convert people, you convert them to the culture because that is a much more compelling reason to stay than the dogma, right? But we would so it was. A very uphill battle there. So like, you know, you'd have friends who are in missions in Brazil or Mexico and they're just like baptizing people by droves. Baptizing is like, that's when you have to enter the Mormon church officially, you get baptized.
Okay.
But there it was just bad. It was really tough going. And that when I was there, it hadn't been open for.
Did you guys like
missionary.
Compete over your numbers and stuff like that?
I mean, you have to.
Is there
well,
a leaderboard?
It was funny because when I was there, there was this weird system that the guy had installed who ran like the mission president, right? He'd set it up where you would get points for things. It was called, PAR, and it stood for performance and recognition or something. He was like this business guy and he set up this total like leaderboard
oh
system
God.
Where you'd like, you'd call in your numbers to the district leader, to like the region or the zone leader who would then call him into the presidency. Right. And it was this whole thing. But basically there was so little interest and people just didn't care. We spent a lot of time going door to door, like stopping people on the streets, doing street displays, like stuff. Now, I mean, even like I hated that stuff then. And now I just cringe thinking about, I can't believe I did it. But that's what you did, right? You know? And like at the point at that time, I mean, you really had to believe in it because it was so horrible. And it was just hard because nobody cared. And Polish is a very difficult language to learn. So you're trying to do this thing that nobody cares about, and you barely speak the language. And it's just, it was really, really tough.
Did you convert anyone?
So one person at the beginning, and honestly, I didn't even know what was going on because I was like brand new and I didn't understand enough to going on. I was the greenie. Yeah. And so like we got this commitment from this lady, and then like we left the discussion, as they were called back then. And my companion, that's, so they're in pairs, you call each other your companion, your comp, right? So my companion was all excited. Yeah. And he was telling me, and I was like, oh, that's cool. I had no idea what the hell was going on. Right? But by the time I left, she had already left. And so basically, like, no.
That was, yeah.
So 2 years, which obviously now I view as like, I mean, a huge waste of time and like a horrible thing that I did. But, you know, I was a small town suburban Utah kid. And I lived in Europe for 2 years and I learned a language. Like, it made me grow a lot as a person.
Yeah, that's cool.
But, I, you know, what I did, I view with disdain because I think it's all horrible. But, you know, I think it made me a different person than I would have been had I not. And I'm glad that I regret it, because if I didn't, I wouldn't be happy with who I was.
Sure. But it's cool that you like were fluent in Polish. I mean,
yeah. And I still speak some Polish. Like, I was in Poland. So we have a collaborator at work who is based in Poland, and I actually hired somebody from his lab. And so we speak Polish sometimes, and I went out there and I speak Polish. Like, you know, it's kind of a fun thing. It's not the most useful utilitarian language, though, obviously.
Nobody's got 13 declensions or something.
Oh my God, it's so miserable. It's so ridiculous. But it's interesting when you learn a language that's not, is like way off topic, obviously, but when you learn a language that's not, that's different. That's, I mean,
like, so different from English.
Yeah, you think about language in a different way.
That's why I learned Hebrew. Like,
yeah, yes. I actually have always wondered why you know so much Hebrew.
I just took it in college because I was just interested
in it. Just because you're interested in it?
Like, I spoke Spanish already. And I wanted to learn something that was like different from English. Okay. And because
was this before or after you had kind of lost your faith?
It was like during the transition. So it was kind of like,
was your choice to pick Hebrew? Sorry, I don't want to interviewing you. Like, I've always actually wanted to ask you this question. Did you pick Hebrew because, I mean, you wanted to learn a foreign language, but because it played a role in sort of a fundamental part of your upbringing, or?
Yes. I think it was like a way for me to transition from like being a Christian to being an atheist. Like, it was a way for me to kind of like somehow maintain a connection to the Bible, like, but not from a believing angle.
Oh, that's really interesting. Wow.
Yeah. So
you're like easing your way out. You're keeping like
Easing my way out. Yeah, I was trying to find like an academic way in. Yeah,
recontextualizing the stuff that you had learned. Yeah, putting it in an academic.
So you could keep a link to it without keeping a belief.
Yeah,
with it.
Although I did choose to take modern Hebrew instead of biblical Hebrew.
Oh, so it was like,
well, because you have sense in your brain.
Well, yeah.
So it would be at least useful and not just academic.
Yeah. That's cool. So yeah, it was weird.
How much of that was conscious at the time?
None.
None. But since then you've kind of like, why did I do this? And
yeah.
Wow, that's super interesting.
I mean, I looked at other, I was like, maybe I could take Japanese, or maybe I could take, I looked at taking Nahuatl, which is like the Aztec language.
That's crazy that they teach that even.
Yeah. Really well, cool. It's Stanford. I don't know. I wanted to take something that was really different from English. You know, I wanted to challenge myself, but, I was so drawn to Hebrew. I was like, Japan, I don't care, you know? And then I was like,
I love
Hebrew,
anime, but
this is like from my childhood.
Yeah, this is like a part
deep
of who you are.
Yeah, even though like, obviously like I grew up in fucking the suburbs, like mainline Protestant, like there was no emphasis on Hebrew whatsoever, but it was like somehow in my mind a connection to, I don't know.
That's cool. That's really interesting.
But unfortunately, I think we do have to take a break. And eventually talk about the Bible.
All right, fine.
Okay, we're going to take a break. You're going to hear some music, and we'll be back in about a minute. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Sunday School Dropouts. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Nico, and we have a special guest. I realized that I might have made a mistake earlier when I introduced you.
Oh?
You have a PhD, right?
I do.
So I should have called you Dr. Ryan Honecker, and that's my mistake.
This is funny because we had Stroopy on, because Stroopy to us is just Stroopy, but he's actually Dr. Christopher Stroop.
Well, it's funny because in my field, no one calls each other doctor unless someone wants something from you or unless someone's fucking with you because you did something stupid.
Oh,
so it's like, okay. you never, if you get an email with doctor on it, like, oh, shit, it's a rep. Or if your coworker's like, hey, great move there, doctor. That means like you did something super, super stupid. So like it's unfortunately all these years of school, basically it's just kind of a fuck you.
Boiled down to a joke.
Yeah, totally. So no harm done.
Today we are supposed to be talking about the book of Titus.
And we'll do so right now.
So I'm going to hit you with some fast facts.
Okay.
Now, these are basically the same fast facts that we did last week for 1st and 2nd Timothy. If you didn't listen to those, I'm just going to rehash it real quick. It'll be like 1 minute.
Like, are you supposed to start a stopwatch? Is that what that look meant?
No.
Put a minute on the clock.
I just, I was expecting a response and instead I got silence. But that's cool. It's cool. We went through.
You were a professional. I thought you knew what you were doing.
In many episodes, we went through the Pauline epistles, quote unquote, which are the letters that Paul sent to various churches to instruct them how to do church stuff. After that, there are three pastoral epistles or pastoral letters, which are letters that Paul sent to his colleagues to instruct them on how to be good pastors, except that Paul probably didn't actually write them. So, fuck everything. Today we are talking about the pastoral letter to Titus, who Paul mentioned in his letter to the Galatians, as, you know, a dude that he was going to send over to the church.
Which was partially a promise and partially a threat to get Titus sent.
And according to tradition, Titus was the first bishop of Crete, but also he hung out with Paul in Nicopolis in Macedonia.
Whoa, that's it's your people.
The Nico city.
Mm.
As well as Dalmatia. And your last name is Dalmatian.
Yeah, if he had been to Baku, then he would have the trifecta.
He might have been to Baku. It just says, you know, Dalmatia.
Yeah. Well, so, no, Baku's in Azerbaijan.
Oh, yeah. You're right. It is. It's the capital of Azerbaijan.
That's right.
What am I even thinking? So, well, he connects to your first and last name, in a way. This is basically your book, and it sucks. So thanks for nothing.
I feel like you might be sandbagging me a little here.
Basically, it's just a retread of 1st and 2nd Timothy using like the exact same words. I think the only difference is that it's slightly more anti-Semitic.
Slightly, yeah.
Yeah. So we start out chapter 1 with...
It doesn't even have... Well, I would say... Oh,
I don't want to tread on your sacred corner. Which is, for the listeners, just a different corner than the etymology.
There's like 12 corners in this.
So because this book is so short, I was like, well, I should read something else about this. So I was reading Wikipedia, which is the layperson's guide to the Bible.
Yeah.
So did you guys read this? It says from Wikipedia, Titus was buried in Cortina, Crete. His head was later removed to Venice during the invasion of Crete by the Saracens in 832 and was enshrined in St. Mark's Basilica in Italy.
Sure.
But then later, of course, the skull... was moved back to Crete. It was returned in 1966.
Oh, it was.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It's pretty awesome.
I didn't read any of this. I'm glad
I'd be so stoked if when I died, my head, like people wanted it so badly that they like were moving it around.
That's a good sign. I mean, like, I don't know. I think the percentage of like saintly relics that are plausibly from the period that they're supposed to be is very, very low. But it's also hard for scientists to get their hands on those sweet saint bones.
Seriously.
My mom and her husband went somewhere in like Germany. And they were like, yeah, we have bones from all three of the Magi. Wow, such great luck, you know?
And I love, like, every Catholic church has a piece of the cross,
right?
It's
yeah.
You could build, like, the Taj Mahal out of, like, pieces of the cross.
We went to one in Santa Fe, New Mexico that had some of the cross. I was like, wow, that lasted a long time.
Yeah. They had sweet relics there, too.
Yeah.
A surprisingly robust relic collection for Santa Fe, New Mexico.
And a dude told us about, like... how many miracles they had performed there with the relics. And we were like, cool. And there was like a plaque that was like, Nuestra Señora Conquistadora or yeah. something. And then the English translation was like Our Lady of Peace. And I was like, that's not
what that says.
That's not the correct translation.
I kind of love relics and reliquaries and stuff like that. I don't know. It's a weird kind of human worship that I can get down with, you know, that like bits of a person should mean more than.
And that have magic powers, gross that it gets, right?
It's cool that they have magic powers. It's just like, it's a weird kind of person worship that I like. Hmm. It's weird that it gets associated with religion because it seems like very...
Like the opposite of religion.
Yeah, it seems like very witchy, you know? It seems like very, like, folktale magic. That, like, if there's a magic person and you get a piece of that magic person, that's magic, you know? That seems to, in my mind, have nothing to do with religion.
Yeah.
That's just like animism or like people love.
That's because,
you know,
like Catholicism has all these cheats to like
make it
accommodate
more appealing.
Paganism. Mm.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point.
Protestantism doesn't have that. Do you have any relics in Mormonism?
I mean, there's a couple of Smith had. So this actually just came out like a year or something ago. So one of the things that he used to translate the Book of Mormon, like these seer stones or whatever, apparently, like it's kind of in this known thing that like the church has one. And I think eventually you just can't hide from the internet. Right. And so eventually they're like, all right, fuck it. And so they had like some picture of some rock that Joseph Smith had that was the seer stone or whatever.
And
so
it was got like a Rosetta stone, like a.
Yeah, it was like something that he'd use to translate.
Because the stuff was written in angelic language, right?
No, it was written. Actually, that's a good question. I don't remember. I don't know what it was written in, actually.
I know the angel. I know the angel Moroni is involved somehow.
Angel Moroni?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, he's the one that actually appeared and showed Joseph Smith where the plates
were. He just showed him where the plates
were. Yeah. So that's the dude like blowing the trumpet on the.
They're
top
all kind
of
like. Fake Hebrew, right? It's like Nephi, like Moroni. They all kind of sound Hebrew-ish.
Oh, that's funny. I mean, I don't speak Hebrew, so but that would make sense because he was making the stuff up, right?
Right.
And so he probably knew enough Hebrew to like make it sound super.
Because it sounds like Bible-ish,
yeah,
but
totally.
It's not.
But it's not biblical.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know. I didn't think about that.
Huh.
Nice move, Joe.
Good
I mean,
job.
He was nothing if not inventive.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Well, if you think about all the religions that came out of that historical period in the U.S.
And it was a huge boom time for
totally
wacko religions.
Yeah, totally. I mean, they called it the Second Great Awakening, I believe.
Right.
So there are all these religions. And so, I mean, who makes it to the top, right? They're like the craziest or the most unique or the most dogmatic or like there's something about it's like a mimetic evolutionary process, right? Like what's going to race to the top in this huge milieu of
and
like,
we love memes here.
That's true. This is like one of the most meme-heavy countries that has ever existed.
I was going to say on this podcast that we're a very meme-friendly podcast in general.
I was going to say like we're like a meme nation.
Mm-hmm.
A nation of memes.
That's the name of your forthcoming novel, I assume. It's 900 pages of nonsense.
Of nonsense.
Meme nation.
Anyway, we're supposed to talk about Titus.
That lasted about a minute.
That's how interesting the book is. And I sat down to read it this morning. I was like, all right, let's dig into this. I had like paper. I was like taking notes. And I was like, it was done in 10
you can
minutes.
Read in
like,
10
oh,
minutes, yeah.
Shit, now what am I supposed to do?
So it's exactly the same as 1st and 2nd Timothy. It uses like a lot of the same phrasing. It starts off, you know, like this is a letter from Paul to my son, Titus, my small scripture son, Titus. Starts off with some similar guidelines about church elders, how you have to be, you know, like not drunk and you have to be like kind and gentle.
The NRSV, it's very insistent that bishops and elders need to be blameless.
Blameless.
Blameless is a weird thing to be. So,
as one who's blameless, can you tell us more?
I just mean it's not saying that they have to be good, or that they have to have not committed any crimes. Just that they need to be blameless. I feel like there's a way that you could be an evil person and be blameless. You know,
if you're good at it.
Maybe. I don't think that's what they're saying, though.
I know. I know that's not what they're saying.
Oh, okay.
I'm just saying it's a. It's an odd quirk of translation that's what it brings to mind for me, that you could be blameless and still not be Mr. Goodman.
So here, so,
well, I had a question for you guys. Speaking of the translation, because there,
which translation did you read?
So I read the, I did an old school, my roots. So in verse 12 of chapter 1, there was this line which I thought was amazing, and I wanted to see how it differed in your Bible.
Oh, this is a famous line too.
So it says the Cretians, I'm assuming that's how you say it. The Cretians are always liars, evil beasts, slow bellies.
Slow bellies.
Yeah.
Mine says lazy gluttons.
Oh.
Mine also says lazy gluttons.
Lazy gluttons.
Here's the full quote from the NIV. "For there are many rebellious people full of meaningless talk and deception, especially those of the circumcision group." That's what we're calling Jews.
A secret, secret Facebook group of which I am not a member. Wink, wink.
Not a member.
The circumcision group. "They must be silenced because they are disrupting whole households by teaching things they ought not to teach. And that for the sake of dishonest gain. One of Crete's own prophets has said it. Cretans are always liars, evil brutes, lazy gluttons.
So
this saying is true. Therefore, rebuke them sharply so that they will be sound in the faith and will pay no attention to Jewish myth."
Do you know why this quote is famous? You know why this passage is famous?
Because of the paradox?
Because of the paradox, exactly. Yeah. Which is that when you say one of the Cretans, a prophet of their own, said Cretans are always liars. Mm-hmm. That's a paradox.
So it's the Epimenides paradox.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
it's like there's two people. One says, "I only tell the truth," and one says, "I always lie."
Mm-hmm, but then
like,
the doctor was a woman.
Okay. Got it. Mine did have a note that said that it was from the Cretan philosopher Epimenides, but that meant nothing to me.
I looked it up, but
I just was like, wow, this is really anti-Semitic.
They do. Yeah, there's a lot of bad mouthing of Jewish Christians.
The circumcision group is like not.
It's like some secret right wing group. Yes! It's like that you're not sure what exactly. They believe kind of thing. Yeah,
it's like
totally.
K Street circumcision group.
Somebody's lobbying Congress hard for more circumcision. Circumcision in schools.
Someone is out there doing that right now. Like, I honestly believe that someone is out there doing that. Chapter 2, teach older women to be good patriarchal slaves so they can teach the younger women to be good patriarchal slaves. Also, literal slaves are great as long as everyone is nice and Christian.
Part of the instructions about how to have good slaves is to make sure that your slaves, like, make Christianity look good.
Yes.
It's, like, basically the most important part about how to have good
optics.
Slaves. Yeah, it's really,
hashtag optics.
It's really all about the optics.
Yeah, I also noted this. This chapter was really about firmly, again, mentioning the whole patriarchal order, which is just like the guidebook for abuse in the future, right?
Yes.
It's like, everyone make sure that you really listen to me because I'm the dude and everyone does what I say. Like, it was
now,
like, very straightforward.
Men are
about it.
Also supposed to be, quote unquote, self-controlled, but they don't have to be busy at home.
Or chaste.
Or subject to their husbands, mm-hmm. like women do.
Or masters, like their slaves are, right?
Yeah.
But I like how he did kind of do like the hip hop thing where he called out like to the ladies and then to the fellas. Like, I thought that was kind of
ladies,
like,
be submissive to your husbands.
Fellas.
Let me hear you say yeah.
Totally. I was totally like he was doing call outs for sure.
Chapter 3, remind the people to be subject to rulers and authorities, to be obedient. There's a lot of emphasis to earthly authorities, like a lot of emphasis on obedience to earthly authorities.
And here, the interesting thing I wanted to bring up on that point is that they specifically say in this that these rules are not, you know, like the law of God, but this is the way that we can, you know, grow Christianity the best. So this is like recommendations about how we can succeed as Christians in as a young church rather than this is the law of God. Mm. I mean, I just feel like if that's the case, you got to put before this one, and nobody should be allowed to quote it. You know, there has to be an intro that says, this is not the law of God.
Yeah.
And then whenever anybody quotes it, they should be like, this is from a part of the Bible that
Paul
is
did
not.
Do that.
Paul does do that.
In like the authentic Pauline epistles, mm-hmm. he will say like, this isn't like God's law. This is just what I think.
Right.
Everybody should like.
And they say that in this, but The problem is when you start to quote it out of context.
It's in the Bible.
Yeah. So. Because it's in the Bible, it has...
Yeah, by default.
Like, even though it's probably not even by Paul. And also, fuck Paul.
By so Paul? It's Bible? Like, by...
It's bipolar?
By Paul?
It's a Pauler. It's not.
This is what you tune in for. The one podcast where we recognize when words sound like other words.
You've heard it here first. But it was confusing because, I mean, there's this whole works versus...
Faith
thing, and in like three verses apart, and like verse, because I wrote this down in verse 5, he says you're saved by work, not saved by works, but by mercy. And then verse 8, like a couple verses later, it says they which have believed in God might be careful to maintain good works. So
yeah,
it's like,
so okay, this is the thing, like Catholics say that faith and works both like play a role in going to heaven, and Protestants say it's faith alone, but like it makes no sense if it's just faith alone, you know. I've come to agree with Catholics on this.
Okay.
It's got to be a combination of faith and works. It's not how I was raised, but like, how could it not have anything to do with works? You know?
When works are mentioned plenty in the Bible too.
Yeah.
Like if that's your text, right? I mean, Mormons are kind of the same way. It's like a combination of things.
It's a combination. Yeah. It's like Catholic.
Because I feel like that's kind of what the
book are there like says, mortal really. Sins, quote unquote? Homosexuality.
I don't think that's a mortal sin.
Being is there black? Mortal combat, quote unquote?
Oh, yeah, totally. The Mormon Coliseum in Salt Lake.
Are you allowed to talk about that, by the way? having survived it, you can never mention it.
I can show you my scars, but I was really good with the net and harpoon.
That's a great choice. Very strong choice.
Not the harpoon, trident,
I edited a text adventure game once where you had to do gladiatorial combat.
Oh, really?
And yeah, and there was like a net option and a harpoon option.
Strong choice.
Yeah.
But you got to be good with both hands. That's the problem.
You know, I'm a musician, so.
I play the piano.
I got both.
And then we've got my favorite part of every Pauline letter, even though this one probably isn't authentic, is the part where he names people and they have wacky names.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got, as soon as I send Artemis or Tychicus to you, do your best to come to me at Nicopolis, the Nico city, because I have decided to winter there.
I did like that line. Like, I'll be at the Hamptons.
Yeah,
I'll be exactly. Summering at the Hamptons.
Where are you wintering? Nicopolis. Again?
Do everything you can to help Zenas the lawyer and Apollos on their way and see that they have everything they need.
Yeah, starting this fall on NBC, Zenas the lawyer.
That's Titus. It's exactly the same as the Timothys. There's nothing unique about it at all. There's no reason for any of these pastoral letters to be in the Bible, and I hate them all.
That's what it's really interesting to think about. Like, what? Like, why did some of these make the cut?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, some of the crazy, you know, pseudepigraphal ones that are just, like, even too crazy for the Bible.
Yeah.
Like, all right, I get why you didn't have, like, crazy Jesus, like,
why the Acts of Thomas. Yeah, you didn't have, like, Jesus'
but
identical
twin. Why did
this
make it in? There's nothing redeeming about this. And did it just get, like, translated into oblivion over the years? Was there actually something there? Like, it just doesn't make sense
to me.
Well,
there's, like, a whole thing. There was, like, the story of how the canonical New Testament came to be is, like, could probably take up its own podcast. Like, we could do like a whole season of this podcast on it, because it took like a couple hundred years, took several councils, to lots of like church patriarchs, and there were several versions of the New Testament before we settled on this one. Or I say we, as
well,
if I had.
There's still like four versions of it or whatever, even now, right?
Is there?
Well, there's the Catholic version, there's the King James, like regular evangelical Western Christianity version.
But those, the New Testament is the same in all those.
Okay, yeah. I guess
Old Testament is different.
Is the New Testament the same in all of them?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe you're right. Yeah, it is just... Oh, yeah, I guess you're right. It's just the Old Testament.
I mean, that's what you were telling me, was that you were familiar with, interestingly, relating back to something we had talked about before, you had already read a lot of the Old Testament apocryphal books from your time in Poland.
Yeah, because the Catholic... Because the Catholic Bible. Yeah, because I'd only grown up reading the King James, and then all of a sudden, the only version of the Bible in Polish was the Catholic version.
So
that's what we use. And I was like, oh, there's all these crazy books. I'm going to read them.
Yeah, they have like five or six extra books in the Old Testament, but not in the New Testament.
Yeah,
but,
and so that's anyway, like all the New Testament ones like that you guys have been doing. Like, I didn't even know that most of these existed. Yeah.
Yeah,
because most of them are boring as shit.
Well, I mean, but some of
there
them
are... There are some good stories.
Yeah.
The Gospels are great.
Yeah, the Gospels are great.
Everything by Paul is kind of shit.
Yeah, it's not that interesting.
I feel like you could get like just a letter or two, like some of the
better... Yeah, just give us like Romans.
Yeah, I was going to say Romans as well.
And like, that's all.
Yeah.
But so do you think...
Acts is kind of weird too, but it should be in
there.
Well,
Acts is great. Yeah, Acts is fun at least.
Yeah, there's some weird stuff in Acts. But I mean, I don't know, was it somebody who was like a Paul fetishist who's like, well, Paul wrote it, maybe even, and so we're keeping it?
Well, so they did, like, they were very sensitive to the idea of authorship when they were putting this together. And things that they decided were not really by Paul, they excluded. Hmm. But they didn't realize this wasn't actually by Paul.
Yeah, I mean, most people think this wasn't right. This and Timothy, right? They think most people
yeah,
think
at this point, like 80% of scholars think they were not, they're not actually by Paul.
And it's also, even if it was, it's still boring.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, like, when you put together a book, like, regardless of concerns about authorship or whatever, and you're saying this should be in the Bible, you have to probably agree with
the politics
the stuff
of
it's,
it.
The
yeah.
stuff that's in it. So at that time, they were like, yeah, this is good instructions
yeah.
for like local bishops, local elders, young women, mm-hmm. old women, do these things. So that's the politics of the New Testament.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, Paul definitely said this because obviously he would want women to be silent.
Right. But anyway, we shouldn't talk about things that we're not paid to talk about, which is why we're going to talk about Lisa mattresses.
Blue Apron.
Well, I did put together a short list of famous Tituses, or tie-dye, as I like to
did
call
you
them.
Did you really?
Because I was like, what are we, like, we're going to talk about this book for like, well, like 10 minutes,
yeah, like
right?
30 seconds. Like, what, lay,
so
lay these
that many,
Tituses on us.
But so Titus was a Roman emperor from 79 to 81, a member of the Flavian dynasty,
that's
or the
like,
Flavor-Flav dynasty.
The Flavor-Flav. Yeah, that was pretty short-lived, only 2 years.
Yeah, and he died pretty young, but he is best known for completing the Colosseum.
Good for him.
And for his generosity.
The inspiration for the Mormon Colosseum,
of course. Yeah.
Of course.
For his generosity in relieving the suffering caused by 2 disasters, the eruption of Mount Vesuvius
Ooh.
And a fire in Rome.
Wow.
There's
we could
also,
use that in Northern California right now.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. Titus Andronicus, the play by our
Shakespeare,
boy. Shakespeare,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm wearing a Shakespeare shirt right yeah. now. It's
which is
from
a fictional story of Titus, a general in the Roman army. It's believed to be Shakespeare's first real tragedy. And then
that's,
finally...
they eat human flesh pies in that one.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's one of the few Shakespeare plays I actually haven't read.
Yeah, it's a
good
one. It's
pretty messed up.
Somebody gets their tongue cut out and they eat human pies.
There's a really good film version of it.
Yeah, with Anthony Hopkins, right? Mm-hmm.
That's the one I saw. Wow, Anthony Hopkins does a lot of cannibalism shit, doesn't he?
He's been totally typecast.
He's been
totally
typecast.
It's not his fault. Yeah. I mean, once you're in that, it's hard to get out.
The cannibalism ghetto?
Once
yeah.
everybody
yeah.
knows, yeah. once you've played Hannibal the Cannibal, like nobody can...
They can see past that.
Yeah.
It's really too bad.
Yeah.
Well, the only other one that I found was the TV series Titus.
Titus, yeah. yeah. I remember that.
What's
remember
that?
It's an American dark comedy sitcom debuted on Fox in 2000, created by its star, Christopher Titus. Pseudo-autobiographical.
He's a stand-up. No he has a podcast, I think, a long-running one.
What if it was just tight ass, like a tight ass?
I mean, what if it was?
Yeah, like what would, I mean, it is, basically. This is pretty like tight ass. I mean, not in like the sense of like, this is tight, as in it's cool, but just like as in the sense of tight ass, like this is really strict and like, doesn't leave any room for fun.
And back to your original question, what if it were?
Yeah.
What if it wasn't?
That's the better question. What if it wasn't? What if this weren't written by a tight ass?
See,
well,
that's
I mean, there's a spinoff podcast right there just waiting.
What if it was just like a libertine?
What if it was just written by like somebody chill?
Like somebody you know? Groovy. And it was just like...
Somebody that wasn't like all like in your face about
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
you know?
somebody was just like, yeah, cool, whatever.
It's like, I want the Bible, but instead of it being like really like extra at me,
it's just like, eh,
it's
whatever.
Just somebody more chill.
Yeah. There you have it.
Tune in next week.
Tune in next week for the non-tight ass Bible.
We should have something mocked up by then, but it actually is time to rate this book.
Rate this book.
I'm nervous.
Ryan, how would you rate this book?
I'm going to rate this book 2 out of 9 slow bellies.
Okay.
Because there's nothing interesting in it. I mean, there's some standard Pauline, even though you didn't write it, sort of power structure, patriarchal. And there's just nothing interesting. It's 3
yeah.
chapters of boredom.
Yeah.
I don't even know why I gave it 2 now that I think about it. I just felt bad giving it 1.
I'm going to give it 1 out of 17 circumcision groups. Because, like, literally, there's nothing in here that isn't already in 1st and 2nd Timothy. And 1st, like, the, even 2nd Timothy doesn't need to exist.
And there's a lot, like, of writing that's the same. That's what I read. It's, yeah, like, very close phraseology.
It is.
Stuff,
it's like,
from the other
this
ones,
is
right?
A trustworthy saying. That's in all three of these pastoral letters. And it's just like, we only need one of these. And even then, it's not even by Paul. And it sucks. So, fuck you, Titus.
Yeah. 4 out of 44 lazy gluttons for me.
Lazy gluttons and slow bellies. That's
yeah,
the same,
same
thing.
Yeah, same.
It's the name
unit
of our band, of course. Yeah,
that's a bad band name. Lazy gluttons and slow bellies.
Actually, we need it's funny to take though, this off air right now.
In chapter one, they mentioned filthy lucre several times, mm-hmm, which is funny because when I was a kid, we used to call, like, as a joke, would talk about money like filthy lucre.
Yeah, filthy lucre.
But mine and Nico's band was actually called Lucre. Yes.
Short-lived band before your other bandmate got deported.
True. Which is a good story for a band. Yeah. Bad story for the band. Good story about the band.
A good story about the band, yeah. Go down in history is what could have been if he hadn't been deported.
Were you going to elaborate on your rating?
No, I'm good. I'm good.
There's nothing to say, right?
Yeah, it's fine.
All right, let's get into the mailbag.
Agreed. Let's crack that bag open.
Listener Melanie wrote in to let us know that she is angry that we covered 1st and 2nd Timothy together. Well, we're angry that 1st and 2nd Timothy even exist.
But I'm angry that you didn't cover Titus in the same episode. Sorry,
angry. I assume that she's angry we covered them at all.
I assume so as well.
Thank you for listening, and we really appreciate your letter.
We love you.
Our listener Alex wrote in to tell us that before our episode on the Didache...
This is our, like, he's written in about Jewish stuff before.
He has. He, quote, had only encountered the word Eucharist when he was a child. He says, I would watch my Saturday morning cartoons until the celebration of the Eucharist came on.
Wait, what channel
all,
is he
what
watching?
Yeah. was
this
Davy
is not
and Goliath
cable,
on his Saturday morning cartoons?
I don't know. Being about 10... He decided that when the, quote, boring Christian thing came on, it was time to go play outside.
Smart.
A sensible choice.
Smarter 10-year-old than I was.
Interestingly, as an adult, he sees the parallels between the Eucharist and the Jewish tradition of Kiddush, or Kiddush.
Kiddush.
Depending on how you want to say it.
Kiddush in Hebrew.
I've heard Kiddush, mainly.
What does that mean, something, the word itself?
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, it probably means, like,
does it mean something?
Or whatever.
Yes. Great question.
Do words mean anything? Maybe. Who knows?
He describes it as basically a small snack-like meal after Shabbat services, but includes prayers for giving thanks.
Eucharist. Thanksgiving.
And ritualistic candle lighting traditionally performed by women.
That's great, because women are not part of communion in any, like, Christian church. Mm-hmm. I mean, if in Protestantism... If women can be clergy, then they can, like, lead communion, but...
They can be in it as participants, right? Partakers of the...
Well, yeah, but women can take communion, right. Yeah. But, like, anyway, not... I mean, you know, whatever. Anyway, our listener Vicky wrote in to suggest that we look at Norse holy texts for season 3. That would be interesting. That would be...
I didn't know there were Norse holy texts, I but know. Why wouldn't there be, I guess?
There's, like, the Edda and stuff. Well, the Eddas, excuse me. She also said there's a lot of cool stuff in them and we're unlikely to offend a lot of people.
Yeah, but how many Vikings do you need to offend before
right,
you're
yeah, there's like nobody
your
left to offend,
worse.
Yeah. She also asked us to bless her two dogs, Tesla and Percy. She says, Tesla is a very good boy who loves everyone and has a lot of physical handicaps, so some days are difficult for him, yet he's always happy. Percy comes from a puppy mill and was very sick and nervous as a puppy. He's much better now and learned to love hugs. But still gets scared sometimes and needs all the love he can get.
We all get scared sometimes and we all need all the love we can get.
So, Ryan, would you do the honors of blessing Tesla and Percy?
I'm so honored. This spirit he poured out on us richly through Jesus Christ our Savior, so that, having been justified by his grace, we might become heirs according to the hope of eternal life.
There you have it. Tesla and Percy. May you be blessed.
Every single line.
And that will do it for Sunday School Dropouts tonight. Before
Ryan,
we go,
do you have an online presence?
Nope, I hate the internet.
Oh,
no,
that's
but
so smart of you.
You can find Ryan's music under a couple of names because he's both prolific and talented. Could you shut up? I'm trying to plug him. Jesus Christ.
Can we edit that out in post?
Yeah. We'll replace her. We'll replace her with a better co-host.
We'll replace her with a CGI co-host.
A CGI co-host, yeah. Yeah, tell us where people can find your music.
So my solo stuff is under Souls and Cities. I have a project in town called Divisor. I also have another project called Better Thief and another project called Iona 4.
And
we're on all the streaming places.
He's all over Spotify and everything. I think I'll probably take this episode out with a remix that I did of a Divisor track last year.
Cool.
They have a new record coming out sometime soon.
Yeah, very soon. And we're trying to get Nico to do another remix for us because his remix was... We did a remix album after our last album, and Nico's track was everyone's favorite.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I'm not just saying that because I'm in the studio. And I didn't just wink. No, but honestly, like, everybody loved it because it's amazing. And actually, I was out of town for a gig, and they played a version of Nico's remix.
A remix of his remix?
They played live a version of his remix at a show that I couldn't be at because I was out of town.
Oh, my God.
Because they liked it so much.
So I'll take that out. You can check it out there, but... Like he said, Souls and Cities, Divisor, Iona 4, and Better Thieves. Or Better Thief?
Better Thief, yeah.
Excuse me.
One word.
You can find us on Twitter at SunschoolDrop.
You can find me on Twitter at Lauren E. O'Neill. O'Neill spelled with an A like Shaquille spells it.
You can find me on Twitter at Nico Bakulich.
He's on Twitter.
Improbably enough.
We bullied him onto it.
Oh, no. I'm so sorry.
It's terrible.
Are you okay?
I'm doing great, thanks. If you have dogs that need blesses or cats that need cursing, you can send us photos and stories to contact@sundayschooldropouts.lol.
That's contact@sundayschooldropouts.lol, not .com. That goes somewhere else that we have no control over.
We want to thank Elise Carlton, as always, for our logo and original art.
And, of course, I always thank Nico for our music, sound engineering, and editing.
Again, a huge thank you to Ryan for his presence and his patience.
Yeah!
My pleasure.
And, of course, his missionary efforts in Poland.
And all the secret handshakes that I'll teach you guys off air.
Excellent.
We will see you next week on Sunday School Dropouts. My name's Nico.
I'm Lauren.
And we'll see you on Sunday. Bye!
Bye!
Bye.
Quickest in the slayer, fresh death stares amongst pits of skeletons that aren't theirs. Flesh worn, rare by frostbite, inflicted pain, shared time, served fair, curled up in the ball of the last rites. Prayer dragged me here. They hunted me down like a baby deer. You didn't see me breaking apart like glass exploding from a shattered mirror. Stone covered, stone prisons, and the crushed souls inside of the frozen fight in the cape limbs, tied down on all. Den that brings more sickness to weaken all of them, and we're forced to lie on all rock beds. All rock beds. Try to survive when ritual leaves nothing behind. Sent hillside where bodies are offered to the skies. Ceremonial knives scalp the hair, scavengers take flight. Liver, heart, eyes, leftovers are a bad sign. Trapped, strapped, cracked, skin worn red from fighting time. My rotting mind sucking on shirt buttons to stay alive. See the great divide, last memories of serving what was tried. Try to live when to live is to die. Who knows what prison these sneaky angry men are planning to keep me inside it. No bread, eat heart, rice instead. All rock beds.
prisons and the crushed souls inside of them, frozen, fighting to keep limbs lying on.